It is a distinct honor to be with you tonight, to have this part in our service together, to tell you something of the experiences that my wife and I have had for some years. I know there are others here who have spent time in other places. I know the Paines spent time in Romania. The Rosas spent time in Bulgaria. And I need to ask Joe sometime. While we were there, I visited a church, a Coptic church, the Church of St. George and the Dragon. And I need to see if he can tell me if a saint had a fight with a dragon somewhere or something. Is what that's all about. I don't know. And our nephew, Scott Hartzell, has spent time in Afghanistan, not preaching the gospel, although he did share with her. But he had his influence. I'm told that before he and his men went on patrol, they all wanted to ride in his Jeep because he prayed before they left. And so I think that's right, isn't it? So they wanted to be sure there was somebody who could keep them safe. So he prayed, they went. So we've been very privileged through the years to have opportunities to go to different parts of the world, and mainly to the West Indies, the nation of Jamaica, as well as Malaysia and the Philippines. So we're talking about going into all the world. And I will be stepping to the side so I can turn and see while we're talking about it. Here is Malaysia. Here's the main part coming on the peninsula from China. And Kota Kinabalu is a city there on the coast of the island of Borneo. The bottom two-thirds belong to Indonesia. The top third belongs to Malaysia. This was a British colony. At one time, you may remember that the British Empire circled the globe. They said the sun never set on the British Empire. They ruled 53 nations. They got their independence about 1962, but still much of the British influence is there. In the schools, English is taught as a second language. And then there are others, and we'll get to this in the Philippines when we get a little bit later. So, we're there, and it is 80% Muslim. So what we do there is basically illegal. Now, they will allow the denomination to exist if they have a headquarters somewhere who can vouch for them. Our headquarters is kind of far away, and so we have a couple little house churches that we meet with there. And kind of undercover, can't put a sign in the front yard, say the church meets here, or put an ad in the paper. So just try to kind of go undercover and do what work we can. There's still some, Malaysia is a growing economic power, and the government knows if they let the nutcases take over, their economy is toast. They try to keep a lid on things, but there are some uprisings from time to time, and the extremists do cause trouble from time to time, so we just kind of have to be careful, watch where we go, because it is against the law, really, what we do there. This is the island of Borneo. Borneo is the home of orangutans. I really haven't tried to preach to them much. They smile a lot, but they won't pay much attention to what you're doing. But it's interesting. It's interesting. On a van taxi, on the side of it, it would have Orang Orang 13, Orang Orang 15. And I asked, what does that mean? I say, well, that's the number of people that you can put on that van. I say, what does the word orang mean? That means person. So I guess they believe that orangutans are people, just like we are, just they live in the jungle. It's interesting. Nick and Justina and their son, Jonathan. There's an interesting story with this. Nick and Justina worked in the medical industry, hospitals, and he was sent to Cedar Rapids, Iowa, to get some training in the Cole College there on radiology. While they're there, he's in class. She's stuck in an apartment with two little girls. Can't go anywhere, has nowhere to go, and bored, didn't know anybody. And she saw an ad in a paper that said, dial a Bible message. A fellow named Angelique Clerk from South Africa, one of my schoolmates, had gone back, came back to the U.S., and he was up in Cedar Rapids to establish a church. So, Malaysia, South Africa, Iowa. They were converted, went back home. Nick started teaching some people, and somehow upset, I guess, some, because one night five men broke into the department, tried to stab him, kill him. And he decided he needed to know more about what he was doing. Talked the government into letting him come back to America for one more year of school, Florida College, which they did, this government did not know. That was a Christian college. That wouldn't have happened. And so our daughter Shannon was in school down here at the time, and we'd visit her and met them, and that's how it all got started. Many Catholics, Chinese came down about 500 years ago from the mainland, and so there's a huge population of the Chinese that are there. This is an old picture, but to illustrate, this young lady here, there it is, Nora. She was born in the jungle, literally in the jungle. When she was 7 years old, her mother died, giving birth to another child. By the time they got her out of the jungle, she had lost so much blood that she died. So Nora and her sister went to live with a grandmother who died, then to live with an aunt who was kind of like Cinderella's stepmother. When she was 10 years old, she was doing laundry for the family of 10 in the river. Eventually, she and her sister ended up in an orphanage, and Nick and Justina learned about the girls and took them in and raised them and taught them the gospel. And I won't go into a long story as to how she came to the U.S., but she came and she lived with us for some time, helped take care of my aged mother who was with us and with another older lady, and then went to school, had a great job waiting for her as a culinary cook. She graduated top of her class, but she felt she needed to go home. She went home. Wrote me in a couple of weeks, "Uncle David, why did I come back? It's so hot here." We're down close to the equator, and it's hot all year round. But she's had a great influence since she got home. Here on one of our trips, Flora and I started out to the jungle to meet some people, to have some Bible studies. You cross over this wide river on this rickety bridge. And she was not real thrilled about this, but Nora was in front of her, says, "Don't look down, Aunt Flora, don't look down, just look straight ahead." But then out there, you know, I don't know if those are the pet elephants, if they have names for them or whatever, you know, in their backyard. My first trip, I took two young men with me, and we were out into the jungle where you cross that wide bridge, walk an hour and a half through the jungle and wade through six rivers, no bridges, to reach people out there where we're setting up some Bible studies. On the way back, it was raining up in the mountains, and one river was higher, and Nick went under. Thankfully, we had a hold of him and pulled him out, as you see there. And when we got back to his van, we could get in and start it, but we could not turn off the alarm. He got the control wet. So all the way back to town for hours, it was, you know, the jungle and technology did not go well together there. Here we are. Here is Nora. And she brought two of her friends with her from her work. And we were having a Bible study. Here's her two friends. So we're translating in three languages. The tribal language, she is of the Dusun tribe. And they don't speak Malay or English. And her friends spoke Malay but no English. So Nora is translating into three languages for our Bible study. You see how this is a real jungle living. That's her sister's kitchen where the tribal lives, you know. Okay, here are the two girls that she brought with her. Alice, Frankie, and Noreen. We had a Bible study one night and took those three, baptized them in the South China Sea the next night. I was surprised, especially for Frankie, who was a Buddhist. Here's Frankie and Alice today. I was able to perform their wedding ceremony the next trip. And they're faithful there and being a part of the church. And here is Nora. Her husband, Thomas Tien, Chinese, was also Buddhist. She helped convert him. And they've got those children now. Well, on another trip, baptized her older sister and her children. Her sister died 6 months later, had cancer, which we did not know at the time. And so Thomas and Nora were married maybe 6 months, and all of a sudden they inherited four children, her sister's children, because the father was an alcoholic, didn't want them. And so they've taken them in, plus their own children, and they're just such a delight to be with, and we just love them so much. Here's Nora and her sisters, and that's the Rose son. I forgot to mention, in their culture, nobody in the family basically has the same last name. Nicholas Rowe, his wife is Justina Ho, she keeps her maiden name, and Jonathan Nicholas, the children take the first name of their father for their last name. So he's Nicholas Rowe, and he is Jonathan Nicholas. So nobody in the family has the last name. So you kind of have to work a little bit to figure out who belongs to who and how that all goes. This is her nephew, Henry Ween, just a great young man. We correspond, and he's beginning to do some preaching. So this is really a hope for the church there, because they really need some young men to come along and be able to take up as the older ones begin to finish up their journey on the earth. Can't see her very well. They have many of the tribal cultures that are there. And she's a priestess of the Kalasan Dusun tribe. And they have their ritual rites they practice through all the years. So this is very prominent, especially out in the jungles where the 11 tribes live. Some of them live in the cities, and they're pretty well civilized and just part of the civilization there. I guess the truck had just died, and so they didn't want to just let it go to rot. So you wonder about it. Well, here's the driver right in there. That's just a passenger up there. But, you know, they're very resourceful. You don't want to do something to try to help people get along. These, obvious, it's Muslims. And they're all Muslim except one, obviously. And they're out playing basketball on outside courts, wearing those uniforms. And we're down by the equator. I guess you get used to the heat. I didn't, but I guess you do get used to it if that's what you grow up with all the time. You want to go to the meat market, maybe pretty early in the morning before the flies all get there, and get it. And if you like pig snout, you can get a pig snout, and they've got them there ready for you to buy. Jimmy and Victoria, this is one of Nora's sisters, live in a house like this, kind of out in the outskirts of the town. So why up on stilts? During monsoon season, they'll have flooding, and so they're safe from that. In their neighborhood are black cobras, very deadly, and I saw one when we were there. Also, on their farming, a lot of them are pretty primitive in their farming. They still use what we call a water buffalo, but it's a carabao. They use them in their farms, and when they're not working, they like to get in the shade. And they can get under the house and rest in the shade there and be happy. Another family there, a Chinese family, Cornelius and Nikki Tan, were converted somewhere else, and they have a house church across town. There may be 10 or 12 that meet with them. And so their daughter is with us in Roswell and been there for some years, finished school, now she's got a job. And they like to take us out to eat and some strange food at some of these Chinese restaurants. They like it. McDonald's is okay for me, but I had a study on last trip with Ling here. She's about 70 years old, Laura. She may weigh 40 or 50 pounds. She has some dreaded disease, and had a study with her translator. She speaks Chinese, and so Nikki Tan translated for us. And she committed to be baptized. And we got to figure out a way now to bring a tub into their house, because very few houses have a bathtub. They have a shower, but bathtubs are not common. So they got to figure out some way to bring a tub in there, because she really can't be taken out, so we can keep her in her mind. There's Sunday morning in the eating area of their house. We move all the tables out, put chairs up, and we'll have maybe 30 there Sunday morning. Sometimes we're able to have regular nightly Bible studies. And here's the summary of our trip there. 24 lessons, about 266 people, and two house churches, and two were committed. Another young woman had a study with her boyfriend, who was a Christian, and she said, yes, she wanted to be baptized. But she was leaving in a couple of hours to fly to the capital, to Kuala Lumpur, said she would be when she got back. I wrote to her yesterday and asked her how this has gone about to see what kind of response I get from her. Philippines, 80 different languages, over 7,000 islands. Most of our work is up in the northern part of the main island, Luzon. And Metro Manila population, 17 million people. What's the population of the state of Florida? I don't think it's that much. I don't know. But you've never seen traffic like there is in Manila. Never have. See, it's right, here's the Philippines, there's Malaysia, and here's Indonesia right down here. So we're all there close together, so it's pretty easy to get from one to the other. 80 different tribes and these different languages in the Philippines. School children in the Philippines study three languages. Each area has their own dialect. They study that. They study English. And they study the government language, Tagalog. This was a Spanish territory until the Spanish-American War in about 1898. And we liberated it from Spain and became an American trust or territory until after World War II, when we gave them their independence. So English is taught. And in these places, I can preach to the young people in English. The older people have to have a translator. It's like kids in school here. They'll take 2 or 3 years of Spanish in high school. They can talk to somebody. 10 years later, they can say, gracias, you know, buenos dias, about it, you know, if they don't keep up with it. And so it is with them as well. Of course, many World War II battles were fought there, and Corregidor was a famous place. Some of you are familiar with Bob Harkrider, who is with us now. Bob and Arlene have written so many class books, good class books. Arlene's father was killed as a soldier there in the Philippines. So he got some ties there with that. He was in MacArthur's staff. Just amazing. Look at these rice fields. It's just amazing to me what can be done there with their engineering. Rice and tobacco are the two, I guess, main crops anywhere where we are. And this is just a beautiful landscape there, going up the hill there, the rice terraces they have. Volcanoes, earthquakes, and typhoons are common. We've been there for an earthquake. We've been in Jamaica for a typhoon. We have not experienced a volcano as yet, and that's okay. I can be satisfied. But the typhoons, they have generally about 19 or 20 a year. And last week, we've been getting many letters from the preachers we know over there. Their church building's been destroyed, their homes destroyed, their crops destroyed, and it's just a disaster. This is definitely a pretty bad typhoon that they've had, so we're trying to help them and raise some money to send to them. That's a jeepney. Common means of transportation. They're all over the island. You see the front of it. What does it look like? A jeep. Equipment that we left over there after the war. And they took this and adapted it. So they produce their own vehicles now. You can seat about 18 here. I don't know how many you can see it on top, but they do write on top. This is not just a photo op. They do write like that. Maybe they'll have a goat or a pig or two on top, something like that. And we have been able to ride some in jeepneys. Okay, here's a bus line. We've been on the bus sometimes 10 hours on a ride to where we need to go. You see the name of the bus line there? P-A-R-T-A-S. Spell it backwards. Satrap. If you know what satrap means, raise your hand. Okay. And they delivered the king's commissions unto the king's satraps and to the governors beyond the river. This is Artaxerxes when they're sending people back down to rebuild Jerusalem. The man who owns the bus line is the governor of the province where we work. This word, it can't be a coincidence that he named his bus line and just spelled it backwards, and he's the governor, and this refers to governors of the provinces. I thought that was interesting when I first saw that. That's a tricycle. It's a motorbike with a sidecar made for two. And I've seen 9 or 10 on one of these. And we do get to ride in them on occasion when we're going somewhere. 80% Catholic. And the old cathedrals, they're just huge and just really historical. During Easter season, we've been there. And it's really a big deal for them. And here's a parade. Men are going down bearing the crosses, some of them with their shirts off, and they're flailing themselves on the back and the blood just flowing down. And then you have people actually crucified. This is her third time to be nailed. Now, some of them, they're tied to a cross, but she's been nailed to a cross. So they know where to drive the nails so as not to hit a vein or an artery. Part of their superstition, doing penance. It's really sad. So what does that say? Church of Christ? Legion of Christo? That's not us. We refer to that as the Legion of Christo 1914. A fellow named Felix Manalo in that year started a group. I think he maybe thought he was the Messiah, something like that. And here are these huge, extravagant buildings in a nation that is in poverty. So I asked, where do they get their money? For one thing, they own several businesses like the Mormon Church does. And if you work for the business, 10% of your salary is deducted and given to the church, even if you're not a member. Also, they take very seriously Paul's admonition to the church at Corinth, in 1 Corinthians, the first chapter. Let there be no divisions among you, but be of the same mind and the same judgment. So during elections, all millions of the members vote for the same candidate. Whichever candidate gives the church the most money. And so that's how they... And I've been told... I need to do more investigation. I've been told that when the service starts and everybody's in, they lock all the doors because if the Lord comes to take up the church, they don't want anybody to fall out. So I guess that makes sense. And of course, and folks, we've got to hand it to the Witnesses and the Mormons, their evangelistic zeal. They're literally all over the world. Wherever we've been, they're there. I remember in Budapest one time, we were in the terminal, the bus and the train station, passing out literature. And I see a couple of women standing over there passing out stuff. And I tell my translator, Susan, so I want to go over there and talk to them. Oh, I want to go. So we went over there. And then, of course, they handed me their stuff. I tried to give them something. They wouldn't take it. And Susan said, I told you so. Oh, I said. But they are everywhere. And it maybe kind of put us to shame that we're not more active in talking to our neighbors and friends we're with from time to time. Egdon and Faith Savio. They call us Mom and Dad. We're very close to them. He preaches for the church there, and he is also the executive officer or manager of the local electrical cooperative. Ilocosur Electric Cooperative, ISECO. He has converted 10 or 12 of his men, and we'll get to them that in just a minute. So a very, very good couple. They have grown children who are our Apples. That's grandchild. And both of their children are now in Australia. Went to school, working there. When their daughter, May, went to Australia, what's it been, Flora, 4 years ago? Something like that. She had just arrived, just as we arrived in Australia. And with our cell phones, we were able to get in touch with her and have supper together that night. Just, you know, amazing what modern technology can do. They have a nice church building. They live upstairs. And this is very common there. Most preachers, the church meets in their house or in a shed next door, something like that. And the preachers don't move every 5 or 10 years like they do here. They kind of, that's kind of a lifetime work with them. And when we're over there, well, we go in the summertime, and people say, why do you go over there? It's so hot. Because school is out. And each week I want to have a one-day seminar with high school and college age students. And we also have one day a week, try to have a preacher's seminar gathered together. And they'll come, we'll maybe have 50, 60, 70 men, and we'll have a whole bunch of young people. And so we go at that time of the year. And so here's that lectureship we're having there. And Flora will teach. Sometimes she's had as many as 200 women in her Bible classes that she is teaching. Sunday morning at Kabugao. Funerals over there. I didn't get the whole thing. But you've got a marching band going along. Then you've got a horse-drawn carriage with a casket. And then the people all walking behind, however long they walk, you know. But funerals are very big. And the cemeteries, I don't have a picture of a cemetery, but there are no underground graves. They're all built up, you know, just everywhere. Maybe elaborate, maybe just, you know, a box-like structure of some kind. Egdon is the manager of two of these offices. And every trip, I preach to each of those offices. They get off work at 4 o'clock. And all the people assemble together in their assembly room, and I preach to them. To as many as 90 employees in one place. I don't know too many businesses here in America that would allow you to do that. Probably not. He's converted 10 or 12. Some of them are preaching. And so it's quite an experience to do this and to be able to do that in the Philippines. Peter, we were out at the beach baptizing somebody, and Peter was there. And you see this, you know, things like this from time to time, because they don't have the medical treatments that we have here. And Peter doesn't complain. He just goes wherever he can go. You have lots of good things to eat over there. Dogs. I was up one morning, early in the morning, and across the little roadway from me, Johnny Diego and another fellow were out roasting a dog for the day. They had the dog, you know, on a rope, and they were roasting over the fire. I learned it was roadkill, and they didn't want it to go to waste, so they got out there and dressed it out. We're having it for the day. We've eaten some strange things, but I have not yet eaten a dog. Alex Valeroso baptized one of my early trips over there. He's now preaching for a church. And up at Calayan, and last year or year before last, he had to have open heart surgery. He had had heart troubles for the years and finally came to the point and had to do that. And that's very expensive, and they don't have health insurance over there like we have. But a couple of churches were able to help out, and yeah, and he's very, very fine young couple. And their daughter, Elisa, baptized 2 trips ago, and she's about 15 now, just turned 16. And I was impressed that at one of my young people seminars, and I had my PowerPoint, all this, you know, and she said, "Lolo," that's grandfather, "would you send me your sermon material?" I don't know too many 15-year-olds or 14-year-olds who asked me for my sermon material. So that made a good impression on me. She's a sweet girl. That's where they meet. That's a nice building. They did have a bamboo shelter, and a typhoon took it down. So we helped them get some money together to put up the building like that. Until last week, when the typhoon came, and that's what's there now. We've had so many letters from preachers we know over there that homes and church buildings have been destroyed, crops destroyed, and so we're trying to do what we can to help them because they don't have their resources. As far as health insurance, we've got one young woman, Ruth, who works. She's a school teacher. Now, they have government health insurance that will cover school teachers if you're in the hospital. Not if you go to the doctor, not if you get a prescription filled, only if you're in the hospital. So that's how that works. Here we're taking some relief supplies. Kalayan, that place there, is way out in the country. You have dirt roads and have to cross a river or two. And on occasion, the river's been so high they could not drive across, and they would walk across and get up to the building where they have their services. They're very good about accounting for money that is sent. Here's a list of the stuff that they bought, what they've done with it, and sometimes I'll get an envelope in the mail, and the people have written down their name and how much they got. I might have 3 or 4 pages of that. I've never seen that in other places, but they really try to be pretty good about that to be sure that we understand their honesty. There's another building, so you can see that they've had quite a bit of trouble with this. I was surprised to find this poster in the store. Miss Gay contest in vegan shows moral decay in the Philippines. But one thing I did note, it said on there that they must have good moral character. So it's going around the world. It's not just in America. It's going around the world. We're up at Sumatra, way out in the countryside, up some dirt, one-lane dirt roads. And this is pretty typical of the buildings they have there. And there are no doors, no windows, just openings. And that works because we'll have an overflow crowd, and the people standing outside can still hear. And so that works pretty well up there at Kalayan. And the preacher up there is Gilbert Ramos. And they have to, it's several miles. And this is how they would drive up there on their motorbike with the 2 little kids in between them, maybe 25, 30 miles to get up there. Welcome to the Philippines. Welcome to the Philippines. In their home, we were in their home one evening, had supper there, and that's their bed. Just a rattan mat, and that's it. You pull a sheet over you to keep the bugs off. And I've slept in something like that before, and it's not real comfortable. I guess you get used to it. And they don't complain. They don't complain. Here's a brother up there at Sumatra. Come some distance, and the carabao pulls a sled, and he rides on that, and they get there, and then the men pick him up and carry him inside. He's there every service. Never misses a time. Or here's Terry, who can only take about 6-inch steps at a time, walked 4 hours to come to church. I don't know too many people here, he would drive 4 hours in an air-conditioned car to go to church somewhere. But I met Terry. He's since died. But what an inspiration, what an encouragement he was. Two main dishes, rice and seaweed. Rice 3 times a day, 7 days a week. That's why they grow over there. It's cheap. And so for many of them, that's about what they can afford. Seaweed. Had some at a dinner. We had maybe 50 or 60 people there at a preacher seminar. And the host, she tries to fix, you know, she'll have a bowl of rice about this big and seaweed. And I tried about, I ate and chewed and chewed and chewed. I could not chew it up. I finally went somewhere and spit it out, you know. But some of it is good, but some of it is pretty tough, pretty tough. Here we had a lectureship out in the country at Bawa. And so they'll cook for 50 or 60 people. You know, the host family, she'll... So they're cooking that, Joe. And so she's got this pot going there. And then also they're fixing a goat and a sheep. So I got to get a picture of that. They had, you can see they've already cut the throat of the sheep. It's dead. The blood's there. And here's a goat. They're burning the hide off the goat so they can get to the meat and cook it and fix it for us, you know. I'd never seen anything like that. Maybe you hadn't either. I don't know. But sometimes we have to walk a ways. The road doesn't go where we need to go, so we'll get out and walk. As I said, try to have a young people's meeting every week, and we'll have 50, 60, 70 young people that'll come, and such an encouragement to see them there. And sometimes they will say, I'll have 3 lessons. Then they will say, teach us some songs, Lolo. And so we'll have a session, we'll get out the songbook and teach them some new songs. A lot of people don't have transportation, so that maybe somebody has a truck and they'll ride in the back of a truck. Or I've seen them, they'll ride a carabao. They'll ride the animal to church. And some, they just walk. But among the people over there, very few own a car. The preachers generally do. And the preachers are out every week going here, there, and everywhere, preaching, working with other preachers. I've never seen preachers work together as well as they do in the Philippines. And the Filipinos are the most humble people I've ever seen. For the most part, they're dirt poor. They have nothing. And they're not trying to get more, more, more. They want to go to heaven. And that's what their interest is. That's what their focus is. Evelyn was baptized somewhere. And her home village, there was no church there. But she persuaded some Christians, some men, to go there and help start a church. And there's a church meeting in her community now. I'm out in the middle of nowhere. And at the end of a service of preaching, these 3 young girls came forward to be baptized. They were invited by Lovejoy. That's her real name. They had walked for some distance over a dirt road. And the last I talked to them, in fact, I got a word from her yesterday, I think. Still faithful. Now, if a 13-year-old can do this in influencing others who obey the gospel, what can the rest of us do? We visited University Church this morning. And there's a lady there that I've known for many years. What's her name, Flora? You get old, stuff gets buried down so deep, you have to dig it out, you know. She's 102 years old. I haven't seen her in 30 years. And I walked up to her, she says, David. Huh? Ari Brannon. She said, David. 102, and she remembered, you know. And she has been responsible for two conversions among the caregivers in the assisted living place where she is. So we're going from a 13-year-old to a 102-year-old. And most of us are in between there. What are we doing? What are we doing? One little place, New Ava Era, there's an elderly widow lady there, and she always has a gift for us. She'll give us a few eggs. Reminds me of the widow's mite. That's all she has, but she wants to share. And so she always touches us with that. Here's one of the preachers, Fräulein Lanessa, his family, and his two sons. And they live in a one-room house attached to a meeting hall. There are no doors or windows. Wind comes in, the rain comes in, and one of their sons has an illness, a bronchitis, asthma, has asthma. And so what do you do with them? Try to get some money to help them to put some doors up, windows, keep the cold air out. That's called a comfort room, CR. That's for a community, not just a house. A community, maybe six houses at Dottolockiton, and that's a nice one. Up at San Juan, another place, here's their community room, and that's the facilities they have there. Welcome to the Philippines. And they don't complain. I don't ever remember anybody asking me, can you send us some money to help us build a bathroom? Never have. Sort of humbles us for what all we have. Going out to the village of La Paz, and you think you're out in the Judean Desert, going through the sand dunes there. And out there is where Rogelio and Arsenia Pascual live, that Roswell supported for probably 25 years or more. He was a Pentecostal preacher. In fact, several of the preachers there were Pentecostal preachers at one time that were converted, preaching the truth. He is early 80s, and preaches were worked with two churches, and they've taken in others. Their children, and they've taken in young people there whose parents could not afford to raise them, and so they took them in. And this is Mario Campagnano and his wife, Nina, and their three children. She is the niece to Rogelio Pascual. This young couple, they were both Pentecostal preachers, converted. And Mario was the hardest working preacher I ever knew. He was working with three or four churches. He'd get up early Sunday morning, catch a bus way up north, and then start working his way back. When I'd be there, he'd have meetings for me with a civic center, young people at high school auditorium, whatever like that. But he was assassinated. Two fellas walked up to him behind him in his front yard and shot him in the back of the head. Left his wife and these four children. This one is about 16 years old now. He may weigh 40 pounds. Born with cerebral palsy. Can do nothing for himself. And so she cares for him, and everywhere she goes, she takes him with her. We'd be in a van going off 30 miles away to a preaching somewhere, and here she comes bringing him. But two of the sons, two of the older sons, are now beginning to preach and take up some of the work of their father. That's one place, several miles up north where they live, in Lanao, and you know, civil building, and when we have a crowd there, you put a tarp up to kind of give some shade from the hot sun. There's his three sons there. And the youngest one was baptized our last trip there. He's about 13 or so. And so family's continuing on with the work. It's interesting, when you go into many of the homes, there is no ceiling, which means that it's cooler in there because the ceiling doesn't keep the heat down. It goes up, rises up. So that's pretty common in their places over there. Here's their home, the Pasquale's home. Here's one of the girls they raised. Mai is out pumping water. Their daughter-in-law, Jeanette, is doing the laundry. Washing machines? No. Maybe one or two places we've seen that over there, but it's all done by hand. They live pretty simple, you know. And here is Nur. Nur was born in Malaysia. Her mother was a Filipino domestic worker, and her father was a Malay Muslim. They abandoned her as a little one. Her grandmother took her in, who died. Their great-aunt took her in, and their great-aunt was Rogelio Pasquale's sister. So she brought Nur up, way up north to Ilocos Norte, La Paz, where we work. So we've known her since she was a young girl, and she is precious. We've helped her go to school. Now, you have to pay to go to school. If you don't have money, you can't even go to kindergarten. And with their economic situation, it's hard. So we and some others have helped several go to school. And so she calls us Lolo and Lola. That's grandmother and grandfather. And she'd write us the sweetest letters. We'd send some money for her school. And she'd say, I had tears when I went and saw that you had sent money for me. Thank you so much. We were there for her high school graduation when she had top honors and her college graduation. And now she's got a job down in Manila. And she rides a bus 4 hours Sunday morning to go to church. I guess she has to get up before breakfast. I would think so. But she is a precious young woman. Oh, I'm going backwards. So Rogel preaches for the church in the village of La Paz where they live. And then way out in the country, over some dark roads, is Kamandigan. And he'd drive out there Sunday afternoon, preach here Sunday morning, drive out here Sunday afternoon, and pass through a village. And there was a man in the village there that saw him come through every Sunday. One day, this man was walking down the road, and Rogelio stopped and offered him a ride. And so the man asked, why do you come through here every Sunday? And Rogel told him, I'm going to preach the gospel. So he invited Rogel to come to their village and their home. And so we went to their home, which is here, and had a Bible study. And then the next day, three of them were baptized. This all from picking up a hitchhiker, which does work. So we're out. We've been gone all day. And we're hot and tired. We're coming home, and we've got to go back to the village. And we know that Arsenio will go out and kill a couple of chickens, you know, and cook them, and we'll have supper together. And I'm dying to have a Big Mac. So we pass through Luag City, and there's a McDonald's there. We're in two vans. I say, let's stop, and I'll buy everybody food at McDonald's. I'm dying to have a cheeseburger. I can feed 30 people for $20. And I got my quarter pounder, and every one of the Filipinos got chicken and rice. Beyond my imagination. We're right next to the China Sea, most of the places where we are there, and we go out there for the baptisms. Or if we're inland, there are rivers that go by, or, you know, canals or something like that. Here's Sherwin Vescara. They meet in this on the front of this little cottage there, and it's literally the end of the road. Literally the end of the road. His wife worked overseas for some time. Some of them, you know, they try to go overseas to get a job and send money back home for the family. And she sent money back home for her sister to get and then to give it to Sherwin. The sister told Sherwin that she had taken up with another man and was not sending any money. She was gone for some years. And he thought she was just gone. Then one day she came home and came to him and her sister, delighted about the whole deal. She's kept the money for herself. So she was home for a couple of years, and then she died. She had leukemia and left him, you know, with children to raise. Good young man. But if you ever talk about something at the end of the road, literally this dirt path will go no more than beyond this place right here. Tobacco and rice during harvest season, they'll get the tobacco and they'll spread it on mats on the roads for it to dry. And so the roads become one-lane roads. That just accepted, you know, that they had no problem with it. They just accept that and put up with that for a few weeks during the harvest season. This is Kuginganan. The Negrito tribe is a mountainous tribe, an indigenous tribe that are extremely poor. We helped them put up this building. They'll have maybe 250 to 300 people. There are no doors, no windows. They just got the concrete block building up after their bamboo building was destroyed. So after the service, they have to take all the chairs and chain them up. And the little ones are busy doing the work, stacking the chairs up so they can be chained. Now, this church was started some years ago. A couple of preachers were driving, had been somewhere preaching and driving back, and they stopped at a river to get some refreshment. And there were some older ladies there doing their laundry. They started talking to them. And then they came back, began teaching, and this large church is the result of that. Because they stopped and talked to a couple of older ladies by the riverside. And so here's laundry day there. And they use solar to dry their clothes. We're getting more into solar power here, but they do use solar there quite a bit to dry their clothes. Some ask, aren't you afraid? You know, we heard the Abu Sayyaf and the MILF, Moro Islamic Liberation Front, that just create havoc in the Philippines, these Muslim terrorist groups. They're mostly down south. Up where we are, it's the NPA, New People's Army, a communist insurrectionist group that tried to overthrow the government. They're pretty well maintained by now, but once in a while we'll have to change our schedule because they've got an uprising. And when we were there one time, I think the mayor of the town was assassinated as he went out raising the flag on Sunday morning. And so the army, and you go to McDonald's, you've got the fellow there with his rifle, the police guarding the place, most everywhere, you know, that is. You go into a department store, they've got the guards there to check your ID as you go in. But that's life. That's life, and that's how they live. So the summary of our work there. Every day of going out two, three, sometimes four places, since they don't have transportation, then every little village has a meeting place, and so we go from place to place to preach to them. And the people come. They come, sometimes carrying their own chair. They'll walk. 86 baptized into Christ. Yeah, maybe some are baptized because the Americans are there. But we get reports from these preachers every week, and they're baptizing people left and right. They just want to go to heaven. Want to go to heaven. And in Florida, when we have a meeting place for them, then she'll teach the women and have hundreds that will come to teach. To God be the glory. And thanks to North Livingston for your participation in this work. Thank you for that. Okay, you can blank that. Thank you so much for the opportunity to come to share this with you tonight, and thank you so much for your help in helping us to do this work. The gospel is still at work. It is God's power to save. Obviously, I don't know all that are here tonight, but I'm sure there are some here who have not yet given themselves in obedience to the Word of God. What are you looking for? What are you waiting for? As Paul was preaching to a fellow named Felix in the latter part of Acts, and he preached of righteousness, temperance, righteousness, judgment to come, he said Felix was terrified. He said, go your way. When I have a more convenient season, I will call you unto me. So far as we know, the convenient season never came. Because history tells us that in 72 AD, an eruption of the Mount Vesuvius, volcanic eruption, destroyed the city of Pompeii, and he was there. The convenient time never came. The convenient time is today. And Jesus said, he that believes and is baptized shall be saved. If you need to respond in any way, would you come and we stand together and as we sing?